episode 116 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded January 19th, 2017. There are no good guys. As of the release of this episode, it is January 20th. The world has changed.
Yep. If you're still getting your podcast, I'm honestly shocked.
Yeah. I don't know if they've shut down all of this.
We're preemptively recording from a boat a couple miles off the...
just to be safe.
East Coast.
Yes. Just to be safe.
Around Maine.
We're actually coastal elites.
Yep.
The podcast that will never go to... Pirate Radio.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I hope that, you know, you guys are in your bunkers listening to this.
Grant totally has a pirate radio mustache, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Grant, you could be a character on that movie.
Yep.
I know. I have this mustache that is, it's curling on both ends. I look like Snidely Whiplash. It's it's a joke that has gone on too long, and I'm just going to let it keep going for a while.
No, over Christmas, my beard was getting long enough to where I was starting to get a little curl on the ends.
Yeah.
And every time I do it, I just touch it, play with it, and my girlfriend would freak out. And I'm like, but it looks cool on Grant. Like, Grant can make it work. Come on, just let me do it. Just let me do it.
Nope. Does it look cool on me? Talk to my wife.
I'm sensing
a theme. Think so,
I'm sensing a theme here, guys, and it's that the women in our lives may not appreciate facial hair.
Yeah, they got bad taste in facial hair.
Yeah, what up with that?
Alternate title for our episode. But folks, we are going to be discussing three new shows, great shows this week. We're going to be talking about Sneaky Pete over on Amazon, A Series of Unfortunate Events. This little, I think that's a Jim Carrey movie we're going to be talking about.
Yep.
This is off of Netflix. And The Young Pope just dropped a new miniseries on HBO.
It's like the Pope, but he's young.
Yeah, he's like a younger version of himself.
Yeah.
So much new TV, Randy.
How many episodes of TV did you guys watch in the last 2 weeks? Because I think it was like 25 for me.
I feel like there's, for some reason, you are trying to escape reality.
I had this rare moment where I was... kind of like guilt watching TV. It was TV I wanted to watch, but I didn't need to watch for the show. So it's like, can I afford to give up this hour for the grand tour? Like, just one more.
I watched two seasons of Catastrophe last week rather than, you know, my homework assignment for TV News. And I was like, oh shit, what am I doing? But it goes by so quickly. It's a
all right.
good one.
Both of you guys present your knuckles. I'm going to wrap them with a ruler. As the resident homework assigner of the TV Dudes, I'm very disappointed in both of you.
Oh, that's very Catholic school. It reminds me of Young Pope.
I think like Jude Law, I might be kind of into that.
Well, hey, we're the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Kyle.
And we are going to just kind of jump into it. A real quick reminder, guys. If you guys want to help support us, you can go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a review, and you can go over to patreon.com/TV Dudes, make a per episode pledge, and we'll give you bonus exclusive content.
Grant? And
what?
You're forgetting a third way that they can support us.
Oh, man. I always just try and sneak past it. What's the third way, Randy?
Ice dancing. You get out there with some ice dancing, some TV Dudes like flyers, like spin whirling behind you. Everybody's going to listen to the podcast.
This is actually a thing. No, I grew up around ice. Like, people do this.
Yep.
And
they do.
It's ice like dancing. A popular way to promote your podcast.
Yep.
Like, Mark Maron, he's got an ice dancing squad.
Yeah. The Pod Save America guys, definitely ice dancing in there.
So ridiculous.
Yeah. Ice dancing.
It only works if you have flags, though. Or it only counts if you have flags.
Yeah, no flags, no ice dancing. It's not really promotional.
Yeah, that's just ice skating.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, guys. So get out there and ice dance. I was going to say, it's like 80 degrees today here in Texas.
You could still...
I was like, where are people going to find ice? But I forget that like the rest of the nation's covered in ice right now.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to some listener questions. If you guys like us on Facebook, primarily, occasionally I remember to put it on Twitter as well, but mainly on Facebook. Make a Facebook account if you don't have one. You guys can ask us questions once a week, and we got a bunch of them this week. First question comes to us from Zach McLernan, who says, so, while 2015 had some of the biggest and most anticipated endings in TV history, and gives us a little reminder, Justified, Hannibal, Parks and Rec, Mad Men, Key and Peele, Community, and The League, just to name a few, And 2016 was a host of cancellations. 2017 will have some of the most unanticipated endings, such as Girls, Black Sails, Workaholics, Fine Comedy, but it's kind of like The League, it saw better days, and The Strain, who at the very least gave us the milk conspiracy and its horrors so many years ago. Of these, which are you most happy to see go, and which, if any of these, are you actually sad to see go? And he gives a little P.S. P.S. I didn't include The Leftovers because in spite of its unfathomably depressing nature, it is still beautiful in its execution and awesome and will be missed by those who watched it. Hint, hint, wink, wink. So, yeah.
Sidebar. I would rather live in The Leftovers world than our current world right now.
Damn.
So let's rescale our depression levels there and remember that at least Leftovers is fictional.
I'd rather be bunking up with Count Olaf than getting slapped around.
I mean, do you know for sure that Trump's not the president in the Leftovers verse?
Oh, shit.
Do you know for sure?
Yeah, you're right. That could be worse. All right.
And statistically,
yeah,
one of your friends is gone.
Yeah, that's true. But statistically, maybe Trump is gone.
Oh,
yeah. Right. So
I think it's Tom Cruise that's gone, but
like half the cabinet's gone. Maybe. So at any rate, my answer to this question is kind of unsatisfying, I think, because honestly, these shows being in existence or not makes no impact in my life. Black Sails could run for 100 more seasons and I wouldn't care.
I would be plenty fine with Girls being done, with Lena Dunham not having that particular platform.
Yeah.
I feel like she's one of those liberals that hurts liberals.
I agree.
I gotta say, earlier seasons of that show, I kind of dug it.
Right? I was kind of okay with it. And the more I watched it, the more it did the same thing as Entourage and Sex and the City.
Yeah.
They just become insufferable. And I'm like, if you're not gonna grow up or like develop at any point, I don't like you guys.
Yeah, some might say it started insufferable.
Yeah.
Like me and Greg.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Well, it's a hard show to defend, but there was definitely something there for me. I never finished watching it, so it's a bummer to hear that. And I guess it's not a bummer to hear they're going away.
Well, you shouldn't. That way you left on a high note. You're like, I still liked that show when I stopped watching it.
I'm like Doctor Who. I rip out the last page. I hate endings.
I'm going to drop in a second PSS. It's going to be, I guess I already said it, PSS.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. In this. If you guys do watch The Leftovers, pay attention to that first episode. You might see a familiar face.
Yeah.
Unless they cut me out because I'm so terrible in the background. I imagine what you're going to see if you do see me is me. I'm going to be standing like staring up in the air as like a background person with my mouth just like agape. Just like, I imagine I'm just like drooling and just terrible.
If that's the case, did you write TVDudes.com in Sharpie on your tongue?
Yeah, my just tongue hanging out. It was just like unfurled.
Yes,
like
where's our product placement, Grant?
Missed opportunity. Next question comes to us from Kyle Volte, who says, hey, TV Dudes, given the plethora of great TV, do you think that your bar for what you watch has gone up? And if it has, can you think of any shows that you loved in the past that you don't think would clear that bar today? Have we gotten a little snooty here, guys?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, when you have this much TV, the cream rises to the top.
Yeah.
You start to notice the bad stuff a whole lot more.
Well, and not even bad stuff, but just like okay stuff. Like, there's definitely network stuff I would not have watched. I can't think of any of it because none of it was memorable to me.
Yeah, you know, the other day I was reading something, an old post of mine on Facebook, where I was talking about how great and amazing the show Lights Out is.
Yeah.
And I think back on that show, and I can't really remember the plot too much. I don't remember a whole lot of what happens, and I don't have this impression that ultimately that show stuck with me or was as great as I initially thought.
I think I'd still would have watched Lights Out. I remember watching it, but I remember really liking. But I feel like
it's not like the best example because, you know, we used to watch some more networky kind of shows.
Well, I go back to like, say, I loved Alias, but I don't know if Alias came on right now, if I would have had time for it. Like a action sort of sci-fi with a hot girl in the lead.
Man, that first season was so good, though.
It was.
I really drove it. Like,
well, you know, and maybe not, because I'm like, Timeless is still very much on my radar, and it is very much a network action procedural. So I guess maybe so. I just can't remember. I can't remember. I'm sure there are. I mean, definitely my bar's gotten higher.
How great J.J. Abrams was.
You know, this is probably not a popular opinion, but my first binge-watching experience was with when Smallville came out on DVD.
Ooh.
Like, it was the first time I'd ever gotten, like, a big TV season and just, like, you know, shut in. And I'm not a big fan of the current CW shows. Like, I watch them for this. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think, I don't know if I'd give Smallville a shake if it came on today.
Yeah. I was obsessed with it, too. Yeah. I remember, like, watching the first four seasons, just devouring it. Man. I think I kind of dropped off right after that because I couldn't access it for free off of college tour sites or whatever. I was using new tablets.
Yeah, it got a little difficult there towards the end. Same boat. Because I'm like, I'm paying $50 a season or $30 a season, whatever it was back then.
It's yeah.
Like, can't sustain. Pre-Netflix.
But I think it's a clear indicator when you look at what we generally discuss on this show. Yeah. We're not talking about a lot of network shows. We're not talking about Empire and This Is Us every week.
Yeah, This Is Us is like a major hit.
We're snobby.
Yeah, we're snobby.
Well, if you like that sort of thing, you can watch the Hallmark Channel. They have it on 24/7.
We've gotten really snobby. We've lost touch with our roots.
Specifically on This Is Us, I know that I have a lot of friends who absolutely love it, and they're people who don't watch a lot of TV, so it's hitting that market. But I think for us, yeah, we're a little snooty, and it's just like, we've seen Parenthood, we've seen Friday Night Lights, we've seen this done well before, and don't maybe need to see it rehashed again.
Yeah.
No matter how well it's done.
Mike Moody says, "Dat young Pope, though." And our answer is, faux show.
Yeah. I'm in that boat. I read that. I instantly gave it a like.
What about young Pope, though?
What about
young Pope, though?
The answer to that question, you know. You know.
Mike Moody is our fearless leader at Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
Shout out to Mike.
We're in a cave. Cave.
The next question comes to us from Benjamin Hamill, who says, "What is the most anticipated new show for you guys this year? For me, it's probably Legion."
I also think Legion is probably my most anticipated, but since he already said Legion, this is a weird one, and I know it's probably going to be terrible, but I'm really looking forward to Star Trek Discovery. They keep changing it. They keep moving it. I really want it to be good, guys. I really want it to be good.
Yeah, but you know, wanting it to be good and knowing that it's not going to be good.
I know. I still, in my heart
totally
of hearts...
totally different things.
In my heart of hearts, I want to believe that Brian Fuller left a strong enough blueprint and they're going to put out a good Star Trek show, but I know it's probably not going to be, but I'm still wanting to watch it.
You know what really stinks is we're kind of at a point in TV right now where, yeah, the most anticipated stuff is returning stuff.
Yeah.
And that just seems so awful because, you know, new TV, that's super exciting. Yeah. You know?
I mean, American Gods is definitely up there as one of those, like, pretty interesting ones.
Yeah.
The Mick, which already apparently came out with first episode, I'm super excited about just because I love Caitlin Olsen from It's Always Sunny.
They got that kid in there, too, from those Peter Pan insurance commercials.
Yeah. He always plays a douchebag and everything. He was in Preacher as well.
Yeah. Here's the other thing, though, guys. With the way Netflix and Amazon drop shows now, we don't know what the really anticipated stuff's going to be. It's going to be like in August... on a Friday, they're going to release a 10-episode show that we all love and had never heard of.
True.
So we don't know what's coming.
But this is based on what we do know.
Yeah.
And I would say the one I'm most anticipating is the new David Simon, James Franco
70s
porn show that he's making on HBO.
I forgot about that one. Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
You know... I'm kind of excited to check out that cop technology show. I don't know if it's going to be good. I mean, I'm kind of got my fingers crossed that it's going to be a Lethal Weapon moment. I'm going to go in thinking this is going to be garbage.
Kyle, you know how you crushed my buzz on Star Trek Discovery?
Yeah.
Allow me to do that for you for APB. It is not going to be good.
It's got Andy in it.
I would just like to refer back to Kyle Volte's question about whether or not our... our bar has gone up. For Kyle, it has not, apparently. His bar has lowered somehow.
Well, I have a special bar. I call it the Lethal Weapon Bar. Marlon Wayans, he gets over it real easy.
Oh, man.
Geez. Fox at times.
Our next question comes to us from Nick Thies. Sorry, I'm not sure how to pronounce that one. I'm going to say Thies. Nick Thies, who says, "Hey, dudes. I am near the end of a rewatch of Dexter, and I'm fascinated by how little by little the show went from great TV to a train wreck. Do you have any examples of other shows dying a slow death like this? I mean, we all remember the headlong collision, like Heroes season 2, but what about Frogs slowly boiling in the pot?" Which, great way to phrase it.
I'll go back to one I mentioned earlier, Alias. Alias was great early on, and by the end, it was utter nonsense.
But Alias was one of those that you could kind of note where it jumped the shark, I guess.
Yes.
When it made the time leap, everyone dropped it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what messed it all up.
I guess, but after the time leap, they did the whole Takes Down SD6 thing, and that was a great episode.
I think you could sprinkle in some good stuff there.
I also... because I have to mention it. I went looking for this question. They were like, what are the 10 or 12? You find the lists. And I'm sure, Grant, you can guess what show was on every critic's list of the show that eventually went downhill. It was Lost.
They fuck off, Liz. Fuck off all of you.
It was on all of them. They're all like at Lost. And they all treat it like as if that's common wisdom. Everybody's like, well, we all know Lost started out great and by the end was nonsense. And I'm like, no, it wasn't. Lost was good all the way to the end.
Man. You guys remember Erie, Indiana?
Something.
On Fox?
Yeah, I'd never seen it.
That was like the show that taught me what it was like to be canceled. Because they got canceled and they just did 4 I don't give a fuck episodes. Like, one episode was literally the kid wakes up and he's in an alternate reality where the show is a TV show. Or like, his town is a TV show and he walks around the TV set for a day.
Oh, you know, that does remind me the show within a show, Supernatural. Start off really good, and I liked it, and I watched like 5 seasons, and they're on like season 12 or 13, and I don't know that it got bad, but I've heard people watch it that it gets bad and then good and bad and then good.
I mean, comedies are a good place to kind of like point out, like The Simpsons is a famous one where it was good, and then it got great, and then it just kind of continued to decline, and now I hear it's like okay, but it's not something I want to kind of go back to.
Right.
The Office... there's another one that like kind of started going down, and then it just kind of was running a little bit too long, and Steve Carell left, and then it went notably worse.
Yeah.
I feel like at least every time I'm on the show, we have one question where the answer is Office. Doesn't matter what the question is, but you can just go Office.
It always fits.
Yeah.
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 Like, I feel like we should have a bulletin board of shows that we can always just go run down. Yep, that one fits this question. Okay, let's hit our last question. This comes to us from Michael Gastini, who says, "So I binged all 8 episodes of A Series of Unfortunate Events on Friday and was awash in a sea of nostalgia, a word which here means remembering the good times I had reading the books when I was a kid."
We know what the word nostalgia means.
What was the most nostalgic you have felt watching a piece of media to the point where you truly felt like a kid again?
I got to go Marvel Cinematic Universe. I know it's not TV. But the reason that hooks me so good is it gets me exactly what, like, when I was a teenager, that was Marvel Comics to me, and they've got that whole sweet spot. So that is definitely plugs into that kid part of me.
That's a good, you know, even though I didn't think they did a great job, I thought they did a good job, but this last season of The X-Files really kind of put me in a time travel mode, because I was at that age where like staying up late to watch TV was really cool to me at the time. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was X-Files. It was kind of cool seeing the gang back together.
Huh.
For me, it's porn. I mean, that really just kind of reminds me of like looking at porn when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I think somebody needs to write a screenplay about a guy who like trashes his VHS tape that he's had for 20 years and then goes on a cross-country road trip to all the porn shops trying to find this one porn actress that nobody says exists, but he's like, no, I grew up with her. I need this tape.
Is that the whole Mandela effect going on there?
Yeah, there it is. The Mandela effect.
Done.
I would like to start the news with a segment I call Dean Norris Needs to Fire His Agent.
Oh, poor Dean Norris.
So Dean Norris, you might remember from Breaking Bad, because where he was amazing.
Yeah.
Followed that up with the show Under the Dome on CBS, which was terrible.
We all called it Under the Dome.
Yeah. Then he recently took a comedic turn with The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, I didn't know he was on that, but okay.
Me neither. Well, why would I know? But his next thing, he's been cast as a regular on Claws, C-L-A-W-S, TNT's darkly comedic drama starring Niecy Nash that was recently picked up to series with a 10-episode order. Set in a South Florida nail salon, the dramedy hails from executive producers Rashida Jones, Will McCormick, and Janine Sherman-Baraz, who serves as showrunner. Shows the rise of five diverse and treacherous manicurists working at the nail artisan of Manatee County, where there's a lot more going on than silk wraps and pedicures. Have I got you?
I kind of like this
okay.
pitch.
Norris will play Uncle Daddy, a dangerous... yep. Oh, it gets better.
I don't know why he would ever fire his agent so far.
A dangerous Dixie Mafia crime boss who is deeply Catholic and actively bisexual.
Uncle Daddy! Oh, I love it.
So, this may be fun, but there is no way this is going to be good TV.
Niecy Nash
yep.
is hilarious.
Yep.
Rashida Jones has a... I think she has a good eye for comedy.
She does. Yep. Granted. So,
I'm kind of interested in this.
Okay,
TNT has been kind of coming out with some pretty good comedies lately.
Also, their brain trust is getting better over there at TNT.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you were saying that Kyle's bar had not been raised.
Hey.
Clearly, Grant's bar.
Are you still hating on TNT? I thought Samantha Bee was your girl.
Oh, I love Samantha Bee, but that's TBS, sir.
Oh, is it
TBS? That's TBS.
Wait. Which one's the one with...
TNT does, like, the dark blue...
Oh, sorry. My gosh. I'm thinking Falling Skies.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of TBS, actually.
Yeah,
sorry,
you guys
TNT.
Are thinking
I was definitely thinking TBS, because Rashida right. Jones says that other
Angie
one.
Angie Tribeca.
That's on TBS.
Yeah, this is on TNT, gentlemen.
When does that Jason Jones show come out? It's already come out.
It's already come
it?
Out. Season 2 is on its way.
Never mind.
Right. I'm sorry.
I will be cautiously pessimistic on this.
It one. Also features Harold Perrineau and Kevin Rankin.
Fuck move it over though, to TBS.
Dude, that's
yeah.
really good.
I know, but there's no way this is going to be good.
I don't say that. It's TNT though.
Amazon has greenlit Neil Gaiman's Good Omens as a limited series.
This Neil Gaiman guy, he's an up and comer, huh?
I feel like people might kind of start liking him.
Yeah.
They might read his books.
He finally decided to cash in on all yep. of his properties.
So it's a 6-part series set to debut on 2018. Gaiman will also serve as showrunner. This is co-written by him and Terry Pratchett. And it takes place in 2018 when apocalypse is near and final judgment is set to descend upon humanity. The armies of good and evil are amassing. Atlantis is rising and tempers are flaring.
Temperatures are rising and bad people are in... the highest offices in the land. It's just cats and dogs.
The executive producers include people involved with Doctor Who and Fleabag.
You said Gaiman?
It's Gaiman.
Oh.
I misspoke.
I was like, you're in the comics industry.
I know.
Have I been saying it wrong?
No, it's Gaiman. I've okay, been saying
it. I wish you would have just messed with him.
I've mispronounced that for years, and I'll do it again tomorrow. I switch pronunciations.
Okay.
It's like tomato tomato.
Or use both. Reading Harry Potter books and then going to the movies, like what? That's how you say that.
So I know that we don't really remember this because it hadn't been brought up at all recently lately. But not the next American Crime Story, but an American Crime Story to come is going to focus on the Monica Lewinsky scandal, because the one thing we really need to know is more about the Clintons and their scandals.
I'm glad that they decided to announce this. After the election?
Yes.
And not before?
Yes.
That'd just be one more thing to just dangle skeletons.
I mean, be fair, though. This is FX, not the FBI.
I can't help but feel like this is them playing to their Trump audience, though.
Maybe. I think that there is plenty of fodder for a very interesting story, because that was a fucking circus.
It was, yes. Well, and they mentioned one of the big reasons this is happening is Jeffrey Toobin wrote the book A Vast Conspiracy, The Real Sex Scandal That Nearly Brought Down a President. It's the same guy who wrote The Run of His Life, that they based People vs. O.J. Simpson on.
Ah.
So it's the same writer. So that makes a certain amount of sense.
Yeah.
Okay. But we don't know when that's happening.
I mean, I don't mind exploring the story. I thought that we got a great reveal about certain characters that the media very unfairly portrayed or, certain parts of the media, I guess.
Yeah.
Like Marcia Clark.
Yeah.
Became like such a tabloid joke. And I thought there was a bit of redemption that that show gave
her. I agree.
So I'm very interested in this.
Well, and two, I don't know if you've seen Monica Lewinsky's TED Talk, but definitely humanized her in my eyes. Just kind of like seeing her perspective, like going through that whole thing, being as young as she was. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they end up humanizing her and some other people in this.
Hey, look, I got no problem with women who want to give blowjobs in the White House. I'm all for it.
I mean, it's a common thing college girls do. Let's be honest here.
Every college girl did. All of them. And all the college guys.
Not all the college
Did you guys
girls.
Not give a blowjob in the White House in college? Was that
not in the White House. Just, you know, in place. She happened to be in the White House.
The White House. Yeah, she was in, yeah.
I think we take different stances on this.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
This is the new American crime story about
TV dudes.
You guys remember that show This Is Us that we don't watch?
You know what? There's a podcast within our network that does cover
Stop.
This, though.
Okay, good.
Tell me that's not for real.
Yeah, Key and Clyde, they are doing a This Is Us podcast.
Okay,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
This Is Us is a good show.
It's just not for me. It's too saccharine.
Maybe I like the podcast.
72 million total viewers have viewed the first 10 episodes in some fashion on all platforms, and it is a huge hit show, and they have renewed it for season 2 and 3.
I mean, I heard that their ratings dipped a little bit, like recently, but they're still kind of the powerhouse over there, and yeah, them getting not just a second, but a third season is a big vote of confidence.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever see the promotional stuff for This Is Us?
Not really.
So sappy.
If somebody promoted TV Dudes like This Is Us, it would go, TV Dudes, love, real feeling, emotion, Tuesdays. Like, literally, that's, well, that's how they do it.
No one has, except Fridays.
We have Fridays.
No one, I think no one has Tuesdays. No one has ever accused the NBC promotions department of being subtle. Do you remember the way they promoted Seinfeld or Cheers or any of those? Probably not, because you weren't.
No, who sees commercials anymore?
But they had some of the worst wacky commercials for Seinfeld that it kind of ruined some of the episode for me.
Yeah. Oh, this week, Jerry finds a hair in his coffee. Wacky hijinks ensue. Come on down to NBC.
That's like UPN 30, syndication advertisements.
Let me give you a specific example I remember.
Oh, man.
It's so terrible I remember it. You remember the episode where George gets a lemon squirted into his eye and he's sort of squinting at people?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not the major bit. It's a bit. That was promoted as Pulp Friction.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. That was how they promoted it. So you can't hold that against This Is Us. NBC promotions and all promotions have been pretty terrible for a while, except for FX.
I mean, I do wonder, though, about like them jumping the gun and also greenlighting this for a third season.
Yeah.
If that's... I mean, we've seen companies just kind of drop them even after they've renewed them later if the numbers don't reflect it. So this is more kind of like telling the audience, like, we back this.
Yeah.
You keep going because... we're going to keep delivering shows.
Hey, you remember that show Star Trek Discovery I was looking forward to?
Yeah,
I've heard of it.
Yeah, well, that's going to be delayed too.
again.
They cast James Frayn from Orphan Black as Spock's father, Sarek, which is cool.
He looks super creepy. He's always like a bad guy and everything.
This is going to be... it's moving from May to... which is the exact date they have.
Never.
Yeah, I think it's not good.
Wait, Spock's father, is this timeline going to proceed?
Yes, it is. It is between Enterprise and the original series.
I wonder what it's going to be more like, Enterprise or the original series.
I hope it's nothing like any of them and it's like a new show that Brian Fuller did.
I mean, why?
Or just like Voyager with Hotter Girls.
Why do sometime in that timeline? Why not go even more future?
You know, I can see why, because there's like the First Contact with the Klingon Empire and all kinds of other stuff that's in there. Not First Contact, but like how the Federation forms and all that kind of stuff is in there. I think that's interesting. Anyway, the thing I think is really interesting about this is that this was supposed to be the flagship that launched the All Access Network.
Oh, yeah.
CBS's streaming service. They've got nothing.
Nothing.
So it's got to be sucking for them that it's not coming out.
Yeah, I'm sure someone's getting fired.
Yeah, yeah. Will and Grace is returning to NBC for a new season.
What? Hey, Randy.
Yep.
What do you think about that?
I don't care.
They get renewed. They get return.
Well, you want to know why? Because people are going to watch that show.
Yeah, I know.
People watch Big Bang Theory. They watch However Many and a Half Men. They watch it all.
I feel like there's two.
They never went to three.
Ran for 8 seasons, and now there's a new one coming back, and I couldn't care less if I tried. Santa Clarita Diet had a trailer. Did you guys see this trailer?
No.
Oh, my God. Grant, did you see this trailer?
Yes.
It's so good, you guys. I'm so excited for this show.
I kept looking at Timothy Olyphant,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, Is that Timothy Olyphant? Is that Josh Duhamel?
Yeah.
I was like, which one is that? Which guy is it?
Yep.
Until it like gave the name credit at the end. I was like, oh, okay, it is him.
You know what's funny is I remember the first time I saw Timothy Olyphant was in Go. And he was sort of the charming, scummy, but funny drug dealer. And this feels like a return to those roots. It's not the serious roles he played in like Justified or Deadwood. It's him having a little goof as he's playing a house husband whose wife, Sheila, played by Drew Barrymore, starts to become a zombie and eats people and they have to deal with that.
Yeah. I mean, my problem is Drew Barrymore.
What? She's a national treasure.
I can't stand her.
I love Drew Barrymore.
What? You saying you don't like E.T.?
I don't.
You saying you don't like The Wedding Singer?
I don't like her.
What about Charlie's Angels, Grant?
I don't like her. She's the worst.
She did this movie in the 80s, like Succubus something, where she played like evil twins and like
really?
Was super slutty. Yeah, she got naked in that movie.
Was she Poison Ivy?
That was it.
Yeah, she was
Poison Ivy, and she was also in Bad Girls.
She also famously danced topless in front of David Letterman on his desk.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah. I love Drew Barrymore.
Okay.
Man.
Anyway, I'm super excited for this. It was a great trailer, and people should check it out. Finally, are you guys ready for... Crackle to get its own super popular TV show?
Is it on Crackle this
it's
show?
It's on Crackle. Sony's so streaming sad. Network. It's a Harry Potter alum, Rupert Grint. Great name.
Mm-hmm.
He played Ron Weasley.
He has a water slide built into his house.
Okay.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. When you get money as a kid, you get the coolest house.
Yo.
He is playing the frustratingly chaotic and utterly posh con man, Charlie Cavendish. In the show Snatch, based loosely on the Guy Ritchie movie from 2000, in that it's about a crime in England.
Oh.
That is all that it has anything to do with it.
But Cavendish was one of the characters
None of these characters are in the movie.
Oh.
What it is this is about, I think it's based on a real story. It is inspired by a real-life heist in London. It centers a group of 20-something hustlers who stumble upon a trunkload of stolen gold bullion and are thrust into the high-stakes world of organized crime. So, more like Lockstock, if anything.
It sounds kind of cool. I mean, really, the only hang-up is that it's on Crackle.
Yes.
But if we are able to, you know, still down or purchase it off of like iTunes or whatever, and we can watch it.
Crackle's like eating your vegetables. Like you get through all your other TV, and it's like, well, I'll watch some comedians getting coffee in cars.
Yes, but in this analogy, there is an endless parade of meat, and there's no need for vegetables.
That's true.
I'd prefer to be like Drew Barrymore and just eat people at that point. It's a series of unfortunate events.
Yes, here
over
in
on Netflix.
Herein referring to a series of unfortunate events TV show on Netflix.
Although it sounds more like a series of unfortunate. I do a really bad
that is
Warburton.
A terrible pattern.
Yeah, a series of unfortunate. Yeah, I just can't do it.
This show, I never read the books. Has anybody here read the books? Okay.
I watched the movie and I don't recall anything about it except for there was like a house on the edge of a cliff or something. And
I think he tied the kids to a train track, maybe.
Okay.
Or parked the car
Fair
on
enough.
A train track.
I have no familiarity with this other than knowing it's a 13 book series at this point, which I found out later. But this is So good, you guys. I loved this show.
I mean, I've watched the first couple episodes. I think, Kyle, you caught the first one. And yeah, it does a great job of establishing a world of kooky whimsy. It's very, very much Wes Anderson.
A little bit.
It's Barry Sonnenfeld. And it's Barry Sonnenfeld back in the mode he was in when he made the Addams Family movies.
I can see that too.
And he directs half of it. I don't think he directed all of it, but he directed about half of it. It's done as 8 episodes of TV. Each one is basically a 2-parter. So it's basically like 4 mini movies. And each mini movie is a book, which means they can get through 3 seasons. And I think there's, in addition to Barry Sonnenfeld, who I think is great, they have 2 really secret weapons on this show. Not even secret, really. They're weapons.
You're talking about the kids?
I'm talking about Neil Patrick Harris and Patrick Warburton.
Secret weapons.
Those are their weapons.
Those are the big guns.
They're not their secret weapons. Yeah.
Well, they also have Joan Cusack.
Joan Cusack is great, but she's only in the first. They have Guardians. They sort of go through Guardians the way that Spinal Tap goes through drummers.
Nice.
Basically, you like every 2 episodes, there's a new Guardian. So I don't want to spoil too much, but I will say that Joan Cusack's in the first one. Alfre Woodard is on there later. Asif Manvi is in there later. And they all play these very memorable guardians for the kids, all sort of quirky and weird. Like Asif Manvi's guy is a guy named Montgomery, who is a snake keeper.
When you say guardians, Count Olaf's always their guardian, right?
No. Count Olaf is after them, after their fortune the whole time, but he is not their guardian for the whole thing.
Okay.
So that is a big thing that they resolved early on. And then I think Neil Patrick Harris's Olaf is so good because this guy's a bad dude. Like, he slaps the kid.
Yeah.
And yet, he's so likable. Like, Neil Patrick Harris pulls off that divide. He's so funny to watch. And that he's charming, even as he's relentlessly awful.
Well, I think what I was, like, so taken by is that I really can't get the image of how Jim Carrey played the character in a very cartoonish sense out of my head.
Yeah.
And yet where I find Neil Patrick Harris looks like him, they both have the exact same kind of costume, makeup going on. He plays it a lot more grounded.
Yeah.
Like he's a regular dude who looks like a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Well, and also the, kind of the eccentric, parts of Olaf's personality, you know, lend to his talents, you know, the singing and dancing.
The It's the Count song is very catchy.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that.
I also love his henchmen. Really good. Yeah. Really good designs. And Patrick Warburton as the fourth wall breaking Lemony Snicket is really great.
Yeah.
He's really funny. There was a point at which I was watching this where I thought, man, Patrick Warburton is just a national treasure. He's so good in this.
He's delightful.
Well, one of my favorite parts were these kids.
Oh, the kids are great.
I really felt like in the Jim Carrey film, one of the reasons why it didn't work for me is I never really felt sorry for the kids.
Yeah.
And they just do such a great job of making you not only feel really sympathetic for these kids, but be like, wow, look at how strong they are. Like, I want to be more like these kids, you know, be able to take all this.
Like respecting them, championing them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they sell how tight they are, their relationship, their closeness, I guess. Mm-hmm. They sell this idea that they're child prodigies, all of them.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was really impressed because child casting.
Yeah, is that's tough.
Oh, bad. Yeah.
It's always bad.
And this kid, the I'm not sure who plays the boy, but Klaus. The looks that he gives, like in the scene where he gets, like, he just nails these things. And but yeah, good.
Also good. Sterling K. Brown as the Poe, the banker. There's a thread running through all of this where adults are either evil, like Count Olaf, missing, like their parents. Or
aloof,
or dumb. Like Poe can't ever help them. He doesn't believe them. It's so believable as a YA because when you're a kid, you feel like adults never listen to you. Even when you're right, you feel like adults never listen to you. And they get that when the kids are telling him, like, no, that's not some guy in disguise. That's Count Olaf. He's like, that's ridiculous. Count Olaf has a tattoo on his foot.
Yeah.
Like there's a whole bunch of stuff goes on where they're just like, if an adult would listen to them for 5 seconds, this would all go away. But in the world of Lemony Snicket, that doesn't happen.
It's a little bit of a spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen the first episode, because the initial premise is that these 3 kids are orphaned when their parents burn up in the house fire. And so they have to go with their closest living relative, which this Olaf guy was able to trick the department into like making them think he was the closest relative.
Yep.
And so he's there to try and kill them and take their fortune because they're wealthy kids, but they don't get their wealth until the oldest one, Violet, turns 18.
Yep.
Now, the parents being dead, they reveal at the end of the first episode that the parents are alive, in fact, that they've been kidnapped. And what do you know? The father's Will Arnett.
And the mother's Kobe Smulders.
He just is in the pocket of Netflix whenever they need a person.
Yep.
He did the Flake Show. He did Arrested Development.
BoJack.
Doing BoJack. And, oh, can you guys, you just do a quick little thing over here? Yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
And pops in for this.
Yep. There are twists and turns. I can't. You guys have only seen one or two episodes.
Yeah, two.
There are twists and turns. I cannot wait for you guys to see it. I won't give them away, but there's definitely some big reveals, some twists and turns and changes and great set pieces. I burned through this in about 2 days watching it with my daughter.
I mean, all the charm that I think of with Wes Anderson films, as well as a lot of the cinematography, it really reminds me of it. But also, like, mixed with Tim Burton when he does a little bit lighter fare, like kind of Big Fish.
Tim Burton at his best, and Big Fish is a good one, yeah.
I if I'm going to be critical, I do feel like some of the production design, especially some of the green screen that they did, I don't know if it's if they had a little bit more time or a little bit more money, but something that I think kind of sets the bar for me, talking about setting bars, is Pushing Daisies. Yeah. Like, loved like the visual style of that show, and I feel like this didn't really quite get there for me. Like, it was a little flat, and that too goes back to kind of the style. Like, you're talking, you make all these references to Wes Anderson, that's kind of done on purpose, but I feel like you can have that really flat composition, but, you know, with a little more depth. And
you're not wrong, it is akin to Pushing Daisies in a lot of ways too. It's got that sort of quirkiness and weird world, but Pushing Daisies was gut lush and gorgeous often. And this is definitely a little more, every so often it's a little more budget TV looking.
Well, and they get it with some stuff like that beach scene in the first episode. Yeah. I love that set. Yeah. I thought that looked fantastic.
Well, it's kind of like grimy, like stage play. Like, it's intentional. Like, you see the cars go by and they're cardboard cutout cars sometimes going by. So I think they definitely have this style that they love playing with. It's very impressive what they do with this world.
Yeah, I was really happy with this, and I can't wait for more.
Well, a little bit more time, I'm going to finish this hopefully this week or next. And let's move on, though, to Sneaky Pete, which is a new show over on Amazon. This is... okay, dude, I got to say something. If you look at the very end credits for this show...
Yep.
The executive producers that it lists, I swear it listed like 15 people.
Yep.
They're all executive producers. Yep. Among them, Vince Gilligan and Bryan Cranston.
And Graham Yost from Justified.
And Graham Yost. Man, see, this is like all of these guys.
You know, one of the first things I noticed about this show?
What's that?
Is one, the title card sequence plays very far into the first episode.
Yeah.
But then it pops up, and I'm looking at the cast, and I'm like... There is a ton of people on this show. What are they doing with all these characters?
Yeah.
Like, where is there going to be a spot for this many people on the show? Because, it just seems like there's so many principal actors on the show.
Yeah.
But this is a show about Giovanni Ribisi as this guy, Mariel or something like
Marius.
That? Marius, who is a con artist, and his prison mate, his prison roommate?
I think his cellmate, His name, Pete. And he talks about this is a great opening. They talk about it, and he talks endlessly about this farm that he grew up on in Connecticut and his grandparents and all this stuff. He hasn't seen it for 20 years. He was 10 years old last time he was there. And he just talks in detail about how great the apples were and all this stuff. And Pete, Marius, when he gets out of prison, finds out that this crime boss played by Bryan Cranston is after him for $100,000 he says he owes him. So he can't go back to New York. So he goes to Connecticut and pretends to be Pete.
Yeah.
And his grandma is played by Margot Martindale, who is fantastic in this. She's in everything. His grandfather is played by a character actor who you would know. The name won't strike a bell, but you would know this guy when you see him.
A judge.
Yeah.
He was a judge in The Wire.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. And then there's some other, like, they own a bail bonds business and they need a skip tracer, a bounty hunter, basically. And he lies and says he used to work for insurance and gets a job with them.
But he's a con artist, so he knows how people operate, and yep. he knows how to read people, so it works well.
And so this whole thing is about him and his family, and there's definitely family, like this family's dysfunctional. They've got his supposed cousin, who's not actually his cousin because he's not actually Pete, but she's basically got, she's an unwed mom with a couple of kids, and the grandparents don't approve, and she's been their bounty hunter, and she's unappreciated, and his childhood friend, who I think is her brother, is a cop, and he's kind of a doofus.
Did it seem funny to you when they talk about, oh, we're so dysfunctional, and when they talk, this was in the first episode, mm-hmm. that's what I watched, they talk about, oh, we don't have any money, or, oh, we're so dysfunctional. I was looking around, I'm like, fuck you guys. You guys have a giant farm. Look at this nice house you're living in. You have an apple farm.
Yep.
And you own your own business, and you're saying that you guys are poor?
Well, that's part of what goes on, because the farm isn't working.
Yeah,
the farm is closed. They just live there now because they own the property. The business is in trouble, and
this didn't seem dysfunctional either. Yeah, to me. When they're all sharing a meal around a table, that's not dysfunctional.
No, but as you watch it, you'll see it, because there's a lot of relationships in there. And when they reintroduce her, like ex, who is the father of the kids, that guy's a scumbag, and he's an interesting character. And Pete is running two cons, because basically he is trying to be Pete and figure out how to get money from these people, because uh-huh. he thinks that they have money and they're just lying about it. And there is something to that. But he's also running a con on Vince, the gangster that Bryan Cranston played, because Vince has his brother and is threatening, he's using him as collateral. And there's a whole thing going on where, like, he may be trying to scam Vince again. The second episode reveals a lot of what happened, mm-hmm. and it's a great... It shows just how scary Cranston can be, even when with hair. And then it shows how it all went wrong and why they're doing it. And
he said how scary he can be, even if he has hair.
Well, yeah, because his scariest role is when he
goes in and out of being like, oh, funny, I'm just joking around with you. Break his fucking nose.
Yeah. Cranston is scarier here than he was as Heisenberg. Because as Heisenberg, you always got the sense he was putting on an act. But Vince is just a gangster. He's an ex-cop who now runs a poker room and just is ruthless and can basically put his feelings on hold if he needs to do something. And he is violent at the drop of a hat. He's a fascinating character, and Cranston kills it every scene he's in. Margot Martindale, though, has a couple really great scenes, too, where she gets to be sort of the matriarch of this family, and you see that she's got steel that she's not using a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Ooh, I love the scene in the chicken coop where she talks about foxes not welcome around here.
Yeah, there's a definite, she knows something's going on.
I was watching with somebody, and they looked at me and they go, you think she knows about him?
Yeah.
I'm like, I think they're trying to imply something, yes.
But I've seen all 10 episodes of this, and as it burns through, like, it's got some references to The Sting, one of the greatest con movies of all time. It definitely has a little bit of that vibe of, like, Rounders with the poker and stuff. Like, this is a really, really good show. I think it's, as it goes on, it gets better and better. And I really do think that this is, Martha from The Americans is in it.
Oh, yeah.
In a notable role. I think this is probably Amazon's best original show. It outshines Transparent for me. It outshines Man in the High Castle.
Well, I had a lot of fun with this first episode. I find that Giovanni Ribisi's putting on some odd wincing affectation a lot.
It is a little weird. He goes into like a deliberate weasel voice when he's trying to be I feel like it's deliberate. Like he's trying to con people, so he tries to seem weak and sort of weaselly.
Yeah, but he's like, the squinting, like, keeps pulling me out of it. I keep looking, I'm like, Ribisi, why do you keep doing that? Why do you keep doing that weird squint?
It'd be really easy to parody him on SNL. Like, it's a definitive tick he's got.
Yeah. I've always liked Giovanni Ribisi, though, and I think he's great here.
He's a great actor.
Yeah.
Hard name to pronounce, but great actor.
The Young Pope over on HBO.
What about that Young Pope, though?
You know about that Young Pope.
He's just like the old one. But
he's young.
He's got an iPhone, and he drinks Cherry Coke Zero.
Yeah, and he smokes, man. That guy smokes.
Okay, so the premise is that we are introduced to this brand new pope who's just been appointed by the Catholic Church.
Yep.
He's remarkably younger than usual popes. He's at the age of like 52, 55.
Yeah.
But he looks like Jude Law, so he looks like he's... 40 or 30.
And he looks 35. Like Jude Law all over. They make sure we get to see his butt and his abs and like everything.
He's looking good. Now, He's taken over, and he's sort of this unknown quantity. They assume that they're going to be able to control him to dictate the, you know, the other archbishops or cardinals. I don't remember the hierarchy.
Yeah.
They assume that they're going to be able to kind of puppeteer him because they think that he might have some zealot tendencies, but they're not really sure. And this show is fucking awesome and bonkers, and I loved every second of it. I watched the first two episodes.
Wow. I was not super into this one. I it's weird as hell.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that they're doing it. And Jude Law is fantastic in it, but everything else left me cold.
I got to say, Lynch Mob, I thought it was amazing. Let's kill Randy right now.
It's so
you're excommunicated.
I guess my bar's
from
a little higher.
From the Church of Sexy Pope.
Your bar is higher? Like, this is one of the first shows, like, I can recall in a while, that is such an homage to Kubrick, and I think it pulls it off pretty well.
That would explain it, actually. I'm not a big Kubrick guy.
Oh,
well,
man.
I also kind of get a bit of a Joffrey vibe. Not as intense. Obviously, that's a character unto itself, but you really get the feeling like, oh, this guy could do some shit if he wanted to,
yeah.
And he doesn't care about anybody but himself.
So, like, this is a miniseries.
Yep.
And I don't know if they have it as miniseries with potential to continue on after.
Yeah.
It really kind of depends on where the story goes, I guess, in the miniseries.
What the church has to say.
Yeah. But I know that a lot of people are also kind of flipping out, like, really enjoying this. Like, visually, it's astounding. I love the music, how it pairs with all these scenes. And he's got such a quirky unpredictability to him, Jude Law's character,
yeah.
That I feel like he's this driving force in a really harshly contrasted conservative world. Like, neither of you guys are Catholic, are you?
No.
Lutheran, so I'm Catholic light.
Oh, okay.
I had to go through catechism.
I grew up Catholic, so a lot of this is familiar to me.
Okay, all right.
Along with, like, the process, getting a new pope and the reverence and all that.
The tourists.
Yeah, the tourists. I've been out there. I've gone to the Vatican, all that. It feels familiar in that sense, and I already kind of have a little bit of a fascination with that world, I guess.
Okay.
Well, what I hope the show continues to do, and what I really enjoyed from the first episode, is taking the Vatican and treating it like the West Wing. Who are the people that are here? What are their motivations? You know, what's said when they're not, you know, having ceremony or making public meetings, you know?
It definitely is setting up a rivalry. A rivalry for power after, I mean, this is very fitting with the times we are in and the day this podcast is coming out, in a way, of putting a person in a position of power. I keep thinking about that Dark Knight quote where it's like, in their desperation, they turn to a man they didn't quite understand. They didn't really understand.
Okay.
And I feel like that's what's going on. Like, they put Jude Law in as this new pope, and he's an unknown quantity that is terrifying to them, especially like with what you see kind of take place in the second episode.
Okay.
I cannot wait to watch that second episode.
And it's got these like peculiar elements of the surreal, like, you know, that there's a whole dream sequence with him crawling out of the mountain of babies.
Yeah, that was a good sequence.
That was weird. I was like, this show is starting with a dead baby joke. Like, yeah. Balls.
In the second episode, there is a fantastic scene involving a kangaroo.
Okay.
And it's these little moments that are kind of peppered in to an already, like, just a show that I'm like captivated by every scene. Like, all the quiet moments, all the kind of intense things, like the choice of words and how he delivers them. I'm head over heels on this show.
I'll say, if you're out there looking for what to watch this weekend, between Sneaky Pete and Young Pope, for me at least, I felt that Sneaky Pete, I had to kind of commit in those first couple episodes to get all that exposition they were feeding me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you got to understand what's happening in the prison to understand what's happening now that he's at the house. And then, like you said, he's setting up two cons. So you've got two stories going simultaneously. This takes its time. It goes much slower. You're kind of, I don't know. Yeah, it kind of peels the Band-Aid off real nice and easy.
Well, you're along for the confusing journey, right? Then there's a sort of formula that you're going to have to fall into. Like with Sneaky Pete, like in the first episode, he gets his case of the week and he, you know, he kind of falls into that.
Yeah.
And that's a familiar pattern for us. Here, it's this winding, weaving narrative of this guy in arguably the second most powerful position in the world.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It didn't gel with you,
didn't,
Randy?
Didn't click, no.
At all, you're done.
Huh? I probably won't watch anymore. I like Jude Law.
You're excommunicated.
I think he's good in that role. I have no interest in the politics of the church.
Even the butt shot with him?
I mean, the butt shot's great. Don't get me wrong.
Randy, my son, tell me your sins. What did you not like about this show?
Man, well, that's it, I guess, then.
Yeah.
It feels like we watched way more TV than we actually talked about.
Well, we can wrap it up early this time.
Yeah, I'll sneak in episodes of stuff we're not talking about.
Our time is pretty much dead on, though. We made great time on this episode.
Right.
Nice.
And what's our homework assignment for next week, Randy?
Actually, next week is a bunch of network shows, like one episode. They're still releasing them one episode at a time, so that's easy.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. Nice. We're going to watch that beloved APB that Kyle's super excited about.
Oh, I can't wait.
And,
Please be good.
I don't remember what else is on there, but I think it's all network stuff. Oh, and of course, 13 episodes of Ultron.
Okay. Jesus. All right, guys. Well, we're going to cut it up there. But if you guys are patrons, stay tuned. We are going to be discussing that new Logan trailer that came out, the new Wolverine movie.
Yep. Red Band.
Red Band trailer, as well as a bunch of X-Men stuff over at patreon.com/TVDudes. And until next week, thank you, Randy. Thank you, Kyle.
Thanks, Grant.
Thank you.
TV Dudes out. The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.